it is Tuesday, June 2nd, and welcome to Korea 24. I'm your host, Alana Hill. Rival parties made their final appeals ahead of Wednesday's local elections, with the Democratic Party seeking a mandate for President Lee and the opposition pressing voters to hold his administration accountable. More on that in News Briefing. On In Depth, we discuss record early voting turnout and what the election results could mean for the Lee administration and South Korea's broader political landscape. And on Hallyu Highlights, we talk Psy facing a prescription drug investigation and Lee Young-ji getting caught up in an election season controversy. Let's start Korea 24 right now. Rival parties made their final push to mobilise voters on the eve of the local elections, urging them to head to the polls. On Tuesday, the ruling Democratic Party argued that voters should back its candidates to help support President Lee Jae-myung's administration, while the main opposition People Power Party urged voters to use their ballots to hold what it called an arrogant government accountable. For more from the campaign trail and other major headlines of the day, we have in the studio with us Deputy Editor-in-Chief of KBS World English News Service, Kim In-kyung. Hello, In-kyung.
Hello, Alana.
So the June 3rd local elections are just one day away. What were the messages from the rival parties on the final day of their campaign? Let's begin with the ruling party.
Sure. The Democratic Party highlighted the successes of the Lee Jae-myung administration and called on voters to strengthen the ruling camp's hand so the administration's initiatives can move forward. Take a listen to what DP floor leader Han Byung-do said during a floor leadership meeting at the National Assembly on Tuesday.
Last year's presidential election was more desperate than ever to end the insurrection, restore democracy, and protect the constitutional order. And tomorrow, exactly 1 year later, is June 3rd local election day. I feel as earnest and desperate as I did a year ago. This is because the Lee Jae-myung government must succeed. We must provide solid support for the momentum of state affairs.
The DP also pointed to gains in the stock market and rising exports as evidence that the Lee administration is capable of getting things done, and the ruling party deserves voter support.
What did the main opposition emphasize?
The People Power Party intensified its appeals to voters through a series of public statements from its leadership, urging voters to deliver their verdict against the government at the ballot box. Here's what PPP Chief Jang Dong-hyuk said at the party's headquarters in Seoul today.
Lee Jae-myung has nothing to fear now that he has taken control of the judiciary and the media with the government and parliament in his hands. If local governments are also handed over, Lee's arrogance will cross the last red line. South Korea will be a country for Lee Jae-myung. My house, my property, and my salary will be taken away and my freedom ruthlessly deprived.
The party also pointed to the weak local currency, inflation, housing prices, and employment, arguing that aside from gains in the stock market, the government's performance on major economic indicators has been disappointing.
Of all the battlegrounds across the nation, Seoul is perhaps the biggest and most symbolic. Tell us about the campaign there. How are the mayoral candidates spending these final hours?
Seoul's mayoral candidates plan to continue campaigning across the capital until midnight. That's when the official election campaign period comes to an end. The DP's candidate, Jeong Won-ho, stressed that his election would enable the Lee Jae-myung government and the city of Seoul to act as one team. The PPP candidate, Seoul Mayor Oh Se-hoon, said the Conservative Party has made mistakes but appealed to voters to pick him to ensure checks and balances.
Well, polling stations will be open tomorrow from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. following 2 days of early voting on Friday and Saturday. And the moment voting wraps up at 6 p.m., the major broadcasters, KBS, NBC and SBS, will release their joint exit poll. In-kyung, can you walk us through how that process will work?
Yes, the survey will be carried out by the Korea Election Pool, a joint election forecasting committee formed by the three broadcasters. On election day, KEP plans to conduct exit polls at 595 polling stations nationwide. It'll also carry out a telephone survey of 28,500 voters to estimate the preferences of those who cast ballots during the early voting period.
And KBS World will provide prompt coverage of the exit poll results through its website, world.kbs.co.kr, as well as through KBS World Radio News and Korea 24. We'll turn now to some other news. Let's follow up on the aftermath of that tragic explosion at a Hanwha Aerospace plant in Daejeon on Monday that killed five workers and injured two others. In-kyung, what's the latest on the investigation?
Police, fire authorities, forensic experts and the Labor Ministry jointly launched an on-site inspection on Tuesday morning. The inspection is expected to focus on the probable point of ignition. Hanwha Aerospace has said the workers were in the process of cleaning gunpowder residue off of equipment at the time of the explosion. Families of victims were also present during the inspection. The victims' genetic samples were submitted to the National Forensic Service on Monday for DNA matching to identify the victims.
Labor Minister Kim Jong-hoon has called for a prompt and stern investigation. What other remarks did he make on this investigation?
He said the case would be subject to the Serious Accidents Punishment Act. This is a law that holds top corporate executives criminally and civilly liable for fatal accidents or mass casualties caused by the failure to implement adequate safety and health measures. Kim also ordered emergency safety inspections of thriving industries, including the semiconductor and defense manufacturing sectors, adding that Hanwha Aerospace had experienced a recent surge in contract orders. Hanwha's Daejeon plant is a key defense facility which makes weapon systems, including the Chunmoo multiple rocket launcher and long-range surface-to-air missiles.
In other headlines, South Korea and the United States have wrapped up the first day of formal negotiations to implement security agreements reached between their leaders at a summit last year. What can you tell us?
The two sides opened the inaugural two-day meeting at the Foreign Ministry in Seoul on Tuesday morning. The meeting was held to discuss security-related items in the bilateral joint fact sheet published last November, following the October summit between President Yi and President Trump. The session was led by First Vice Foreign Minister Park Yun-ju and U.S. Undersecretary of State for Political Affairs Allison Hooker. The first day of talks focused on South Korea's plans to build nuclear-powered submarines. On Wednesday, they are expected to share views on South Korea's plans to secure the right to enrich uranium and reprocess spent nuclear fuel.
Turning now to the Middle East conflict, Trump says he anticipates striking an agreement with Iran over the next week on a memorandum of understanding to end their months-long war. In-kyung, give us more details.
Sure. In a phone interview with ABC News on Monday, Trump said he expects to finalize a deal over the next week to extend an existing ceasefire and reopen the Strait of Hormuz. Trump said he has not yet agreed to the MOU as some details still need to be settled. Aside from an extension of the ceasefire and the reopening of the strait, the U.S. is demanding that Iran turn over its highly enriched uranium and no longer pursue nuclear weapons.
And finally for today, consumer prices rose in May by the biggest margin in 2 years and 2 months amid soaring global prices stemming from the crisis in the Middle East. In-kyung, give us the details.
Sure. The Ministry of Data and Statistics announced Tuesday that the Consumer Price Index increased by 3.1% from the previous year. That was the highest jump since March 2024. Petroleum led the gains at 24.2%, the largest increase since July 2022, when the index rose 35.2% after Russia invaded Ukraine. Service prices jumped 2.8%, partly driven by a 33.5% surge in international airfares. It was the sharpest jump in international airfares since the government began compiling related statistics in 1995, primarily due to increasing fuel surcharges resulting from higher oil prices. Core inflation, which excludes volatile food and energy prices, rose 2.5% year-on-year.
And that wraps up today's news briefing. Thanks so much, In-kyung, for bringing us all the headlines.
Thanks, Alana.
With the June 3rd local elections just one day away, candidates are making their last-minute pitch to voters, and voter interest appears to be high. According to the National Election Commission, the final early voting turnout for the 9th nationwide local elections, held Friday and Saturday, stood at 23.51%, the highest level since the system was introduced for local elections in 2014. Wednesday's elections, the first nationwide vote since President Lee Jae-myung took office, are expected to serve as a barometer of public support for the policies of his administration. And to get a closer look at this week's local elections, we're joined now on the line by two guests. First, we have reporter Park Joon-ha, who specialises in offering analyses of domestic politics for Korea Pro. Great to have you with us, Mr. Park.
Great to be back.
We also have political science professor Benjamin Thompson from Gyeongbuk National University in Daegu. Thank you so much for joining us today, Professor Thompson.
Thanks so much for inviting me on.
Well, let's start with early voting, which has already drawn quite significant attention. That two-day early voting for this week's local elections, which will decide the next mayors and governors of major local governments, ended with a turnout of 23.51% on Saturday. The National Election Commission said the final early voting turnout for the 9th nationwide local elections stood at, as I just mentioned, over 23%. The figure is the highest since early voting was introduced in 2014. Mr. Park, for our listeners, could you give us the details about this record high early voting turnout?
Yeah, so the headline figure, as you mentioned, is that early voting turnout, it did reach 23.51% nationwide. So more than 10.49 million voters, they cast ballots during the two-day early voting period. It was surpassing the previous local election record set in 2022. In fact, both days individually set new local election records, underscoring how firmly early voting has become established within South Korea's electoral culture. So what makes the result also notable is that turnout increased across almost the entire country compared with 4 years ago. Only North Gyeongsang province saw a slight decline, while every other province and major city recorded gains. So there's two main factors to this. First, as I mentioned, early voting has become increasingly normalized. Many voters now see it as a convenient alternative to election day rather than an exceptional option, which has steadily pushed participation higher over the past decade. And second, several key races have become unexpectedly competitive. So in many battleground regions, supporters of both major parties appear to be having been highly motivated to mobilize early. Turnout rose sharply in places like Daegu, South Gyeongsang province, both of which feature closely watched races between the two parties. Perhaps the most striking example was North Jeolla province, where turnout surged to 35.05%, more than 10 percentage points higher than 4 years ago, which also reflected quite an unusually competitive local political environment. So overall, the record turnout reflects both the maturation of South Korea's early voting system and also heightened voter engagement in what has become a much more competitive election than many observers initially expected.
And Mr. Park, how are the rival political parties viewing the early voting turnout?
Right, so the two major parties are interpreting the record high early voting turnout in very different ways, each seeing it as evidence that political or public sentiment is moving within its favor. So the ruling Democratic Party argues that the strong turnout, it reflects enthusiasm among voters who want to support President Lee Jae-myung's administration. And they reject what the party calls the insurrection forces associated with the political turmoil surrounding the former president Yoon Suk-yeol's martial law in December 2024. So Democratic Party leaders and lawmakers, they have pointed to high participation among younger voters and rising turnout in traditionally progressive regions such as Jeolla province as signs that their supporters are highly motivated. The opposition People Power Party, on the other hand, sees the numbers quite differently. So the PPP leaders argue that the elevated turnout reflects voters' desire to check the ruling party's growing dominance at both the national and local levels. They have characterized the result as a warning against what they describe as the Lee administration's political overreach, and they have cautioned against assuming that higher turnout automatically benefits progressives. So both parties are making these arguments despite acknowledging that recent elections have weakened the traditional assumption that highly early voting turnout inherently favors one side. So in the 2022 presidential election, for example, early voting reached a record high, yet the conservative candidate ultimately prevailed in Yoon Seok-yeol. So these political scientists that are looking over this high early voting turnout, they tend to be quite a lot more cautious. So as several mayoral and gubernatorial races are tightening within the final weeks, supporters on both sides, they appear to be have become more motivated to cast ballots early, and it's making it quite difficult to draw firm conclusions about which party actually benefited.
Mm-hmm. Professor Thompson, what's your take on the high early voting turnout, and what could it mean for the results of the local elections?
Right. So I think, and here I agree quite a bit with Mr. Park, that the turnout reflects kind of the current trend or the current tendency to see fairly high voting early in Korean elections. So if we look at the 2022 presidential election or the 2025 presidential election, we'll see that also early turnout is pretty widely subscribed to among Koreans. So in that sense, there's not so much to read into here. In terms of election forecasting, much depends, at least normally in Korea, on where the early turnout happens. Mm-hmm. So political scientists have kind of shown that, you know, regional early voting may make or help explain one of the reasons why progressives have done so well in early turnout in the past, because people in Jeolla province have used it quite extensively and people in their 20s and their 30s have used it quite extensively. That won't matter so much in a local election like this. You know, if there's high voting turnout early in Jeolla province, that doesn't affect the election in Daegu or in Busan because they're separate elections. So that's important to bear in mind. I think one thing to think about is, you know, whether or not conservatives are actually fired up to use early voting. In Daegu, for example, as we mentioned earlier, we see quite a bit higher early turnout than before, even though still comparatively it's the lowest in the country. And that could be a sign that conservatives are picking up and starting to use this kind of opportunity. Or it could mean that progressives in Daegu are voting, or the distribution could be, you know, indeterminate. So I think it's wise to be cautious with forecasting based on early turnout. Much of the voting in places like Daegu is still going to happen on election day, and that will be decisive. So we'll see. If enough conservatives sort of sit the vote out, or we see a sort of shy conservative phenomena, those competitive races in Daegu and Ulsan and Busan might go in unexpected ways. But again, it's early to forecast that.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot to play for on election day. Let's turn now to the broader political stakes. As we've touched on, Wednesday's elections are widely seen as a referendum on President Yi's first year in office. So the ruling DP argues that voters should back its candidates to help support the Yi administration, while the main opposition, PPP, is urging voters to use their ballots to hold what it called an arrogant government accountable. Professor Thompson, can you talk to us about the significance of this week's local elections, and what factors do you think will determine the results?
Yeah, so by-elections and local elections like this, and many democracies do work in ways like a referendum or a poll on the approval of or disapproval of voters towards the current government or current party in power. And some of that may be going on. Certainly, you know, if you look at President Lee Jae-myung's approval ratings, have been very, very high and fairly consistently high. And so if it was in fact the case that this election was going to be a kind of barometer on approval of his government, you might expect the Minjudong would actually have a little bit easier of a time than they seem to be having at the moment. So the closeness of the races suggests to me that there actually might be quite a bit of local issues or other political issues that are kind of filtering into the decision-making and the calculus of local voters. In terms of other things that are important in the upcoming race, I think both parties are kind of in a complex situation where there are internal divides in the party. In the Gukmin-Ihin party or the PPP, the current party leadership is seen as kind of affiliated with former President Yoon and kind of in tune with that sort of hardline politics. And there's a real open question about whether that's going to be successful or not in the upcoming elections. And that could put some pressure on the current leader, Jang Dong-hyuk, there. Similarly, the leader of the Minjudong or the DP, Chung Chang-rae, is also seen as being kind of a hardliner, and it's widely predicted that he's going to fall under some pressure during and after the elections, and there are already moves afoot to kind of try to oust him. So these internal rivalries and internal complexities in the parties are also important in the upcoming elections, and we'll have something to say about those after tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. Well, Professor, as you just touched on, the DP was initially expected to perform strongly, but several key races now appear to be tightening. Just for a bit of context for our listeners, unlike a general election, of course, where the focus is largely on securing a parliamentary majority, these local elections involve more than 3,700 posts nationwide, including 16 metropolitan and provincial leadership positions. Mr. Park, from each party's perspective, what kind of a result would count as a victory?
Right. Well, for the ruling Democratic Party, the key benchmark is whether it can translate President Lee Jae-myung's national popularity into victories in the country's most politically and economically important cities. So Seoul and Busan would be in this case. So a truly dominant result would mean meaning 14 or more metropolitan and provincial governments while capturing these symbolic battlegrounds such as Seoul and Busan. If that happens, the DP could credibly argue that they control the presidency, the National Assembly, and most major local governments, giving President Lee a strong mandate only a year into his term. So by contrast, if the DP win most regions but fail to take Seoul or Busan, or both, the narrative becomes more complicated. So they could still claim victory numerically, but it would be harder to describe the outcome as a sweeping endorsement from voters, just because those two cities carry outside symbolic and political weight within South Korea's political makeup. On the other hand, for the opposition People Power Party, the threshold for success is lower. So after its setbacks over the past 2 years, simply retaining several key strongholds, especially Seoul or Busan, would allow the party to argue that it has halted its decline and remains a viable national force against President Lee Jae-myung, the way anyway that they frame it. So even if it loses the overall nationwide tally, preserving control of major and metropolitan governments, it would give it important institutional bases from which it could rebuild ahead of the 2028 parliamentary election or general elections. So one race attracting particular attention is Daegu, for example. If former Prime Minister Kim Boo-geum of the DP were to win there, it would be a remarkable breakthrough for the DP in a very traditional conservative stronghold. Beyond local politics, such a victory could elevate the former Prime Minister Kim Boo-geum's profile nationally, and also position the DP within a very much more stronger political position. But ultimately, however, most analysts believe that the election's broader political meaning will be determined less by Daegu and more by the outcomes in Seoul and Busan, as I've mentioned. So those two cities are likely to shape the national narrative on whether the Democrats or the Democratic Party achieved a genuine landslide or whether the opposition succeeded in preserving a meaningful foothold against the new Lee Jae-myung administration a year into his term.
Mm-hmm. Professor Thompson, I want to get your take on that same question. Beyond, you know, the raw number of seats that are won, how should we assess what would count as success or failure for each party?
My understanding is fairly similar to Mr. Park's. I think there's a sort of different standard for what each party will be looking for in terms of victory. For the PPP, holding the line could possibly count as a victory. I think they would probably like to show that they're competitive outside of their strongholds too. Even if they don't manage to quite win some of the races outside of their strongholds, if things are close, that would kind of indicate that return to national competitiveness that they're certainly looking for. For the DP, in some sense, because they're already doing so well nationally in recent elections, the bar is set kind of high. So, you know, even if they, you know, in some sense win the upcoming election, but their performance declines compared to 2025, that might be taken as a kind of sign of changes and a kind of diminishment of their current success. So there's a lot of room there for, you know, potentially symbolic victories for the DP if they are able to win or pick up one of those competitive seats in a region normally held by the PPP. So those points are all pretty much the same. One thing I would probably want to emphasize is there's still a sense in which we're living in the aftermath of President Yoon's martial law. And so the sort of standard partisan divisions within Korea are a little disrupted at the moment. And there's perhaps some support going to the DP that won't be durable in the long run. So I'm interested in whether we see the phenomena of shy conservatives not voting in normal numbers. Mm-hmm. If that's the case, and that explains some of the success of the DP, if they happen to have success tomorrow, unexpected success, if that explains some of that, then that's not a long-term trend necessarily, because those voters may well be coming back in the next election. Mm-hmm. So that's something that's interesting to me. Similarly, whether the more conservative or more hardline approach of the PPP and at least the more hardline approach EP leadership, whether those resonate or fail to resonate with electors are also interesting, because that could, you know, instill some change in tactics and tone among the parties mm-hmm. we should be paying attention to. Whether we see a future of say more serious polarization is one issue to be connected to that.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of the future, let's look beyond election night and consider what the results could mean for the broader political landscape. Mr. Park, once the votes are counted, what could the outcome mean for each party going forward?
Well, ultimately, the local election that we'll be seeing play out tomorrow is shaping up as a referendum on two competing visions. So one is whether voters want to empower the new Lee Jae-myung administration to govern with fewer political obstacles. The other is whether they believe South Korea's political system still needs stronger institutional checks on a ruling party that already controls the presidency and the National Assembly. So the answer right now is voters will effectively be deciding how much political capital they want to give either side going forward. So if the ruling Democratic Party performs strongly, particularly, as I've mentioned, if it captures Seoul and Busan while winning most metropolitan and provincial races, the result will likely be interpreted as a vote of confidence in Lee's administration. So it would suggest that public backlash against former President Yoon Suk-yeol's martial law and eventual impeachment remains quite strong, and that voters are comfortable giving the DP greater control over national and local institutions. So such a result could also strengthen the ruling party's momentum on legislative priorities. So measures such as the special counsel investigations into alleged politically motivated prosecutions under previous administrations would likely gain additional political capital or legitimacy, even with scrutiny from the opposition. So more broadly, a strong victory for the DP would make it easier for the Lee administration to argue that it possesses a renewed public mandate for its policy agenda, how further it goes. On the other hand, if the People Power Party manages to hold Seoul, Busan, or a meaningful number of major local governments, this implication could be just as significant, despite the party remaining in opposition nationally. So such a result could suggest that concerns over concentrated political power are beginning to rival this sort of anti-Yoon Suk-yeol sentiment as a motivating factor for voters going forward. So the PPP would be able to argue that voters support checks and balances rather than one-party dominance, and that would provide the PPP with its first credible recovery narrative since the political crisis surrounding martial law, and it would give conservatives important governing platforms from which to rebuild ahead of the 2028 general election. So for the Lee administration, a more competitive outcome would not constitute a political defeat in the conventional sense, but it would signal limits to the ruling party's dominance over the political electorate, and opposition-controlled cities such as Seoul or Busan could become influential counterweights to the central government within the Blue House and the cabinet, and make it harder for the DP to claim an overwhelming national mandate in 2028.
Mm-hmm. Professor Thompson, how do you think the election results will shape the political landscape in the months ahead?
Well, I suspect that what I'm interested in is the kind of internal party rivalries and the possibility that the PPP and the DP will be increasingly dominated by more extreme members. So we've seen this tendency in leadership contests over the last year, and it suggests a sense in which the normal incentive structure of elections might be shifting. Normally, you expect political parties to be pretty closely attuned to what wins in elections and to change their policies, to change their tactics, and to change the faces representing the party in order to kind of accommodate that. Yet there does seem to be a sense in at least some democracies these days in which that breaks down, and where more extreme voters or more committed activists end up dominating political parties, perhaps to the expense of voters in the middle. This is part of the normal phenomena of polarization that we're seeing in a number of democracies, and we seem to be seeing it in Korea too. So I'm interested to see whether Korean political parties are able to eventually resist this tendency, or whether it comes to be an increasingly important factor in Korean party politics as well. So looking at whether, for instance, Jeong is successful or not after the election, if things go well for the PPP, and of course we expect that he'll keep his position. If things don't go so well for the PPP, does he keep his position anyway? Will be kind of a key question to be looking at. Mm-hmm. Rivalries within the Minjudong also look like they will exist in the future, even if Jeong loses his post, as we might predict. I don't think he'll be happy about the machinations to kind of relieve him of his leadership. And we can imagine those factional rivalries will also matter for the DP in the future.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll be closely following the results and their implications when voters head to the polls tomorrow. South Korea's three major terrestrial broadcasters, KBS, MBC and SBS, will conduct a joint exit poll to forecast the outcome of Wednesday's nationwide local elections. The survey results will be released through their election coverage as soon as voting ends at 6 p.m. on Wednesday. And KBS World will provide prompt coverage of the exit poll results through its website, world.kbs.co.kr, as well as through KBS World Radio News and Korea 24. So be sure to tune in for that. And that's all we have time for on today's in-depth segment. Reporter Park Jun-ha from Korea Pro, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
And Professor Benjamin Thompson from Kyungbuk National University, thank you so much for your insights.
Lively conversation as ever. Thank you.
Welcome to the Korea 24 Stock Market Update. The benchmark Korea Composite Stock Price Index rose 13.11 points, or 0.15% on Tuesday, to close at a record high of 8,801.49. The tech-heavy KOSDAQ lost 24 points, or 2.29%, to close at 1,026.03. You can check Korean stock market updates at world.kbs.co.kr.
Next, we are joined by Daniel Che for our Korea Trending segment. For this part of the show, we check out some of the most viewed stories and issues covered by Korean news outlets and handpicked by the Korea 24 team. Hello, Daniel.
Hello there, Alana.
Daniel, what are we starting out with today?
When there were reports about the government's plans to install air conditioning in correctional facilities, it drew strong public backlash. But the Justice Ministry stood its ground and explained the necessity of such changes.
Well, firstly, fill us in on the details of the prison cooling plan that some perceived as controversial.
On Sunday, some local media outlets reported that the ministry allocated around 1.2 billion won, nearly $790,000 this year, to upgrade cooling systems in prisons. The ministry explained that there have been continued efforts to devise measures to respond to extreme heat and prevent cases of heat-related illnesses, with some past measures including operating cooling shelters and providing ice water to inmates.
Daniel, tell us about some of the public criticism of the ministry's plan.
Some left online comments questioning whether taxpayer money should be spent on air conditioning for convicted criminals. Others complained it's not fair to have inmates stay cool with air conditioning when low-income elderly residents living in cramped urban housings are toiling and suffering under the sweltering heat.
So what's the latest from the Justice Ministry on the air conditioning installation measures?
So on Tuesday, the ministry defended its plan, calling it the very least they can do to protect the lives and safety of inmates vulnerable to extreme heat, including the elderly, people with disabilities, and patients. It added that the cooling equipment will be installed in the corridors, not inside the cells, providing indirect cooling to mitigate indoor temperature hikes, and that it's not just about improving living and working conditions for the inmates, but also for correctional officers working there.
Well, as the country braces for another hot summer, it looks like that discussion over how best to protect, you know, vulnerable groups both inside and outside prison walls is likely to continue. We'll move on now to our next story.
Korea's drinking culture has been garnering global attention for being quite intense, among other things. But latest figures show that change might be brewing. Expenditures on alcoholic beverages fell sharply recently.
Okay, well, let's get straight into the numbers. Just how drastic of a decline are we talking about?
So government data from the Korean Statistical Information Service showed on Tuesday that related household consumption expenditures stood at 13,000 won, around $8.50 per month on average. That's down 9% on year. It's the steepest on-year decline since 2019, when the agency began compiling the data on a new quarterly basis. The figure has also declined for the 10th consecutive quarter since the fourth quarter of 2023, when it fell 4.4%.
And do we know any of the key driving factors behind this trend?
Some officials pointed to growing number of people focused on health and fitness or wellness, shift in corporate culture following the COVID-19 pandemic. A separate data showed shipments of alcoholic beverages in South Korea went down to some 3.15 million kiloliters in 2024, marking a decline of over 17% compared to a decade prior.
So as people are drinking less alcohol, are we seeing more interest in alternative beverages?
Well, in tune with a cultural shift that reduced company after-work gatherings that involve drinking and a growing preference for alcohol-free socializing activities, there's been notable boost in sales of non-alcoholic beverages in the nation, namely non-alcoholic beer and wine.
Interesting shift there. Fewer drinks and more alcohol-free options. We'll see if that trend does continue. And let's now turn the spotlight to today's final story.
Well, we note on our calendar here in Korea that June 30 is Election Day this year. It's also World Bicycle Day, officially designated by the United Nations in 2018. And just in time, Incheon International Airport announced plans to expand its shared bicycle service.
Okay, how big of a bike sharing service expansion can we look forward to at the nation's main gateway?
Incheon International Airport Corporation said Tuesday that it's teaming up with a local bike sharing service firm to extend pickup and return zones across the airport and surrounding areas. Previously, they were only available at a limited number of select docking stations. Now, it will spread out to a greater variety of locations, including Incheon International Airport Terminal 1, Sky Garden, the cargo terminal complex, and the most significant addition being Incheon Airport Cargo Terminal Station on the Airport Railroad Express, a dedicated rail link connecting the airport to the central city, Seoul.
And how were the decisions made when it came to choosing these expansion sites?
The locations were selected based on demand surveys of around 70,000 employees stationed and working at the airport. So they are seen as the most reliable source when it comes to finding out ways to improve first and last mile commuting connections between transit and their workplaces.
Well, other than increasing convenience, are there other goals Incheon Airport seeks to accomplish with this expansion?
Yes, it is also geared towards supporting the country's energy-saving measures amid rising costs linked to the Middle East conflict, including the vehicle driving restriction system. The bike service will provide alternatives to cars. First, there will be a three-month trial run of the service. The corporation will evaluate ridership and safety data before deciding whether to transition to a permanent program.
And that's all we have for today's edition of Korea Trending. Thanks so much, Daniel, for bringing us all the stories.
Thank you so much for having me.
Time again, Hallyu Highlights, your weekly scoop on everything hot in Korean entertainment, from the latest K-pop hits to the K-dramas everyone's binging. And as usual, we're joined today in the studio by our resident K-culture expert, Bernie Cho. Bernie, great to have you with us.
Always good to be back.
Well, first up today, bit of legal controversy involving one of K-pop's arguably most recognizable stars. Singer-rapper Psy has been referred to prosecutors on suspicion of obtaining prescriptions for psychotropic medications through third parties without attending required in-person medical consultations. This is according to police. Authorities are alleging that between 2022 and 2025, Psy received prescriptions for Xanax and Stilnox from a university hospital in Seoul, but without personally seeing a doctor. The Seoul Sodae-mun police station said it referred six people to prosecutors on Friday, including Psy, his manager, and the prescribing doctor on suspicion of violating the Medical Service Act. Bernie, just how serious are these charges?
Well, in Korea, just across the board with no details, just the minute you hear the word drugs, everything stops. Everybody goes quiet because regardless of the dose or the severity or the strength of the drugs, it's just an all across no, no, no. And I think in this case, because with Psy, for those who are not only fans, but more importantly, have followed his career, drugs in the past, in that case, it was marijuana, had sidelined him, not even once, but twice, actually. And so for him to be embroiled with another quote-unquote drug controversy is obviously troubling. Now, the reason I do quote-unquote is that I think the allegations, or in this case, really the indictment that the prosecutors are going after has more to do with, I think, procedural mistakes rather than some sort of, you know, scandalous, you know, use of illicit drugs for, you know, psychedelic purposes. Psychotropic, a lot of people don't know what that word is. It kind of sounds like psychedelic, but it's not. Mm-hmm. What is known is that, you know, Psy, obviously being, you know, an extremely busy, not just artist, producer, but also entrepreneur, like many people who happen to be, you know, on that kind of stressful lifestyle, it's very well known that he was seeking treatment for sleep disorder. And the drugs or the prescription drugs that he had secured without an actual medical appointment, without an actual medical prescription, and without him even showing up to actually pick up the drugs or, more importantly, you know, go through a checkup to get a prescription, I think is really the crux of the problem here. The drugs themselves are commonly used medications for things like depression or things like sleeping disorder and whatnot. And so the fact that a mistake was made, you know, as busy as he was, this is something obviously he should have taken time out to just go through the motions like anybody and everyone else would do, but didn't. And unfortunately, it's not just him, but anybody involved who enabled him to even do this have all been brought in or maybe perhaps brought down at the moment. And so it's something that the timing could not be worse because, you know, Psy was featured prominently in a new CNN documentary series called K-Everything, and rightfully so, because, you know, he was profiled as a K-pop pioneer. And then right before his summer tour is about to start.
Right.
Now, the bad news that he had prior to this was actually he was having difficulties securing permits for some of the cities. And I was like, oh, this is strange. This is odd. Like, you know, his show is monumental, momentous. Why is he having problems booking or getting, you know, booking events and venues and getting permissions? Now, I think we know why. Mm. It's because he has this thing hanging over his head. Now, how this will impact ticket sales, I have no idea. How this will impact his upcoming, you know, summer tour, which I believe is called Summer Swag, no idea. But it's something that because now the prosecutor's office has formally charged him and is formally going to go through with this, it's going to be a bit of a headache. And, you know, and the penalties can be quite severe. I mean, he could be looking at anywhere between potentially, I believe, 1 year in jail, or a fine of about 10 million Korean won, which is, for overseas viewers out there, roughly about $7,500. And so exceptions can be made if, you know, there are genuine physical ailments going on. But obviously, you know, he's very robust and very vigorous and jumps around the stage in front of 100,000 people. So the physical incapacity excuse is not going to work here. And so we're going to have to follow closely how the prosecutors decide to proceed with this. But it's safe to say at the moment, he's kind of sort of in trouble.
And as you said, Bernie, this case is still ongoing. It's hard to say how it's going to impact that upcoming tour he has. But ultimately, what's the lesson to be learned from this?
Well, I think, unfortunately, for anybody working in the entertainment industry, you're not above the law. And as mundane or as inconvenient as doing day-to-day chores and errands. And again, this is why people have personal assistants, why they have managers to do these things. And, you know, what Cy had done is frankly, it's a very common practice, having other people pick up your medications at pharmacies. But in Korea, that's a no-no. And then given the fact that these particular medications, prescription drugs, you know, are used for legitimate purposes, but have been known to be addictive and have known to be abused, is something that I think is why he's been spotlighted. And, you know, I hope that moving forward, for all parties involved, I mean, I do hope that it's a lesson learned. But for anyone out there, if you have to go to the doctor's office to get a doctor's note, go.
Well, in a very different kind of controversy, local elections approaching on June 3rd, tomorrow, just a day away, early voting already underway, last-minute campaigning is intensifying, and for some celebrities, even a choice of colour can draw unwanted scrutiny online. The latest public figure to face criticism is rapper-turned-actress Lee Young-ji. A social media post that might otherwise have seemed harmless drew quite a lot of attention after she showed off her newly dyed red hair while Korte's song Red Red played in the background. Bernie, break it down for us. Why was this so controversial?
Oh my goodness. Well, one, I'm a huge fan of Young-ji, not only as a rapper. By the way, she is phenomenal. She knows how to literally and figuratively drop the mic. But now she's gone into acting. And so, you know, obviously she's got a high profile and she's very much an emerging, not just a singer or actress, but star. So obviously a lot of attention on social media. And oh my goodness, this poor woman, of all the days she could have just let her hair down. And in this case, it looks very red. I think arguably yours is a little better, but hers is pretty good. And again, you know, in the moment, Cordis's Red Red is the hottest song right now in Korea. And what could have, should have looked very innocuous and maybe even fun on any other day would have been okay. But unfortunately, she picked the wrong day, not a fault of her own. And it's unfortunate because anytime a celebrity wears anything red, or worse, it's red with the number two, netizens who obviously have a certain political lean go hard and really come after these celebrities for being, you know, political propagandists for one particular political party. And what's unfortunate is that celebrities, because of the heat and more importantly, the hate online that they get, they quickly take down the post. They quickly apologize. And as you know, in Korea, if you're really, really sorry, you handwrite the apology. And then, oh my goodness. And then, you know, her repost broke my heart because she put on her sort of, you know, after school sort of glasses as if she had spent the whole night studying. But in this case, I think she spent the whole night really stressed out. And then also she dyed her hair back to black. And I thought it was just really unfortunate that she went through it. But, you know, obviously she read the room right in the sense that, you know, this would be the best way to sort of take the temperature down a notch. But she's not the only celebrity who's gone through this. And frankly speaking, I don't think she's going to be the last. Last year, Karina from aespa, she was sporting a very sporty sportswear jacket that happened to be red and black. And frankly, I thought it was a little bit more black than red, but it happened to have the number two. And she got absolutely pounded for that online. And then, you know, there are other celebrities like Hong Jin-young. She, Hong Jin-young, a TV personality, she was literally just photographed at a restaurant wearing a red sweater. And that was enough to get people absolutely lit. And so it's one of those things where I think, unfortunately, it's safe to say that right around local election time, just try not to wear red, which I find ironic because the World Cup is coming up any day now. And what are the national team colors? Red. What's the jersey color? Red. What are you going to do? So I think maybe moving forward, right around local election time, celebrities, stars, artists, post black and white photos.
I mean, we talked last week about how Jungmin Chan posts that Starbucks photo. It just goes to show how careful celebrities have to be when it comes to kind of what they might think might be an innocuous post on online, but really they have to think twice, maybe three times, just to be triple safe.
Yeah, black and white photos.
Yeah, that's great advice. Continuing with today's theme of entertainment controversies, we turn to one of the biggest industry scandals of the past year involving actor and model Kim Soo-hyun. In a major development, police have reportedly concluded that the alleged evidence circulated against Kim was not authentic, but consisted of AI-manipulated materials. So this finding has led to a noticeable shift in public opinion, with attention now turning toward that YouTuber who led this online campaign against him. Bernie, remind us of what these allegations were and what led to this latest development.
Yeah, no, it's hard to believe it's been a little bit over a year, but this particular scandal surfaced when an actress by the name of Kim Sae-ron, unfortunately, had passed away. Mm-hmm. She had committed suicide, and she was very much beloved. And she had been linked to Kim Soo-hyun, who not only was her agency's boss, but also they had dated. Now, then questions arose about when did they date? Did they date when she was underage, which obviously is extremely problematic. And apparently one of the reasons why Kim Sae-ron, unfortunately, took her own life was financial duress, which may have been some way, shape, or form affiliated with the working conditions and arrangements that she had with her previous agency. So that in and of itself was quite scandalous. Mm-hmm. But then where things really went into overdrive, and, you know, I know for us, although we talked about the story in many ways, I think we kind of stepped back a bit for a few months because the details and the documentation and the audio files and the text messages that were being leaked, what should have been confidential content, was put out in public. The dirty air laundry was being aired, and it just looked horrible. Mm. The optics, the narrative, the story against Kim Soo-hyun, I mean, he became not only the most canceled, but I would say probably the most crucified Korean celebrity for last year. And, you know, obviously he shed a lot of tears. He had a lot of press conferences. And more importantly, unfortunately, he lost a lot of projects, and a lot of projects he worked on just could not get released because the allegations were so salacious and so severe. But from that point till now, Kim Soo-hyun insisted, look, he may not have been the best boyfriend, but there were certain things he definitely did not do. And last year, he had put out a theory, which many people thought was a conspiracy theory, but he put out a theory, which we now know now as fact, that a lot of these so-called evidence was actually not authentically real. They were artificial intelligence manipulated files. And quietly, over the past few months, forensics were applied to all of these horrific so-called evidence. And the police conclusively said this was AI tampered, AI manipulated so-called quote-unquote evidence. And the main culprit behind this campaign, Kim Sae-yi, he was the owner-operator of the very controversial YouTube channel known as Karo Sero Institute, or also known for some reason now as the Hover Lab. I have no idea why. But he was taken into custody, and now his assets are being seized, and now he is facing a very massive lawsuit from the Kim Soo-hyun camp. And the original amount was staggering. We were looking at roughly about 12 billion Korean won, which is roughly about 9 million U.S. dollars. But given the severity of the allegations, and more importantly, the evidence against this YouTuber, that amount now has been rumored to skyrocket to upwards of 30 billion Korean won, or $25 million plus, because essentially, because of this one particular YouTuber who went on an absolute cyber-wrecking campaign, he utterly, absolutely destroyed Kim Soo-hyun's career. And once the news came out that Kim Soo-hyun was a victim of this AI evidence, surprisingly, on his social media accounts, fans started coming back. And more importantly, there are whispers, hopefully would be coming rumblings, of when some of his projects that have been backed up or delayed may see the light of day.
Well, glad to hear that case has been concluded for Kim Soo-hyun, and hopefully he'll be able to enjoy some kind of a comeback, and hopefully we'll be able to discuss it again in the future, Bernie, here on Hallyu Highlights. And that wraps up this week's edition of Hallyu Highlights. A big thank you to Bernie Cho for guiding us through the biggest stories and buzz in Korean entertainment. Always great to have you with us, Bernie.
Always good to be here.
And that's a wrap for today's edition of Korea 24, but we'll be back tomorrow with more of the stories shaping life here in Korea and beyond. I've been your host, Alana Hill. Thank you for joining us. And until next time, take care and goodbye.
KBS World Radio.